Welcome to Uber.
All right, start over.
Sorry, I'm the parasite. Anthony, go ahead with the introduction.
Go ahead.
Parasite. Welcome to Uber Cube.
The podcast where we talk about all things cube, but with refreshments. I am your host, Stu. And as always, I'm joined by my other two wonderful hosts.
Hi, I'm Mate, also known as Magic.
And
I'm Anthony, also known as Uber Bear.
And I'm sorry, I just kind of leapt in there as kind of a bit of a parasite, a bit of, you know, a leech almost. I don't know, I just felt compelled to today. I don't know if that's relevant to what we're going to talk about today, but Anthony, please, if you would, just go ahead and let's talk about what we're going to be covering today.
So we're going to be talking about this divisive conversation, and I have found this out via the interweb, is that the term parasitism, which is defining, well, it's funny because the community has all kinds of definitions for it. I put it up on Reddit. I put it up on Facebook, MTG Draft. I put it up on our Discord. And I wanted to get the multitude of responses. And boy, did I receive a lot of them from the community. And I want to give a shout out to our good friend, ChillMTG, who gave me, he basically said, "Hey, Anthony, it's cool. You can cheat off of my homework." I'm like, all right, cool. So I cheated off his homework because he has an amazing video that really breaks this down, probably far superior to what we're going to do in this media.
Very possibly. And his video is going to be linked in the show notes that we include in our public show notes channel. I would thoroughly recommend, even if you're at home, sitting on a computer, whatever, and you're about to watch or listen to this episode, go and check out that video first. It's a great, I don't even want to say a primer. It really just covers the term, and the opinion that Chill has, I think, really is a good representation of what the community kind of looks at it as and what the term describes as far as cube and magic is concerned.
I found that the term, when I was doing my interactions with the community, most people are on the same kind of path as what they believe that term means. But I did find that it has an air of subjectivity that's applied to that term. And it seems sometimes it goes all the way from being the pure definition of what we'll talk about here soon to becoming highly subjective and sometimes used for the means of which some listeners mention, I'm losing this game, I'm going to call XYZ term parasitic. It's interesting to see that type of dialogue as we progress. Mm-hmm. But before we go any further, we're not going to do the thing we always do. We're going to talk about some cool news. May has some updates on KubeCon.
I do. As you may not know, that Cube submissions are going to be open on March 26th for KubeCon. So we all want to make sure to submit your cubes and make sure that you have everything nice and tidy, finish up your updates and whatnot that you need to do before KubeCon. And it'll be open on the 26th.
Which will be in the past by the time this comes out, which is,
oh yeah,
you know, I would encourage everyone, if you have a cube and you're on the fence and you're uncertain as to whether or not you want to release your beautiful cube upon the masses of KubeCon, I will tell you, as a person who has submitted in both times as featured cubes, Uber Bear's Artifact Cube two times now, and Uber Bear's Horror Cube, I will tell you that as a result, through the critical feedback and the analysis of this wide variety of magic playstyles, essentially breaking your meta, what you're used to in your little homegrown section of players, has made my cubes, I think, superior to what I could have ever done alone.
I think it's an interesting point because typically you're going to have a pride about your cube, right? It's something that you've created. It's an experience that you've generated for your play group and whoever you get to play with. And obviously you're going to get feedback from your group, whoever the players are that you choose to share this experience with. But now you do get a huge audience to be able to share that with and get that feedback from. And like Anthony has mentioned, and like numerous other curators that we spoke to that have submitted cubes for KubeCon 2023 and 2022, a lot of them said it was pretty crazy the kind of feedback that they got, recommendations that they got, things that were so out of left field, they were never thought about it. Things that they decided, like, man, I'm just going to throw this in there. This is great advice. And it made their cubes better. So like Anthony said, throw it in there. No harm in it. Get that feedback from the community. It can be nothing but good things.
the diversity of insight alone is worth its weight in gold to a curator. That's what you get at a KubeCon, right? Is all of that feedback. Mm-hmm. So when I tell you they've gotten better and better and better, that is simply a result of the KubeCon crowd. So thank you, KubeCon, for doing that for us. And thank you, May, for being part of the KubeCon team.
Yeah.
Our very own.
So now we're going to do the thing that we always do. Nope, we're not again, because we're still doing Parasite Mode. UberCube has an event on April 27th at the Gathering Place in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I posted that today on Reddit, and somebody said, this is cool, man, but you didn't give us an address. So I was like, okay, well done, well done.
I mean, not that you want to just be like www.google.com.
There's a yes, lot of gathering should, places, we apparently.
Provide, yeah, that's right. We should provide.
It's like I've been querying the internet all day, I found
very
it.
True, very true.
So at the Gathering Place on April 27th from 9 a.m. till 9:30, we have an event where there'll be 64 players, 8 cubes, and then the top 8 will mobilize into Uber Bear's Power Cube, my 540 Power Vintage, which is the first time that I've actually released that cube to the masses.
It
is. So.
And let's say that it's up to 64 players. 64 players is the max. So if you want to get your ticket,
get
that's
some
the
now.
Number of players that are going to be supported for this main event with this top 8 Power Cube, with the prizes. I mean, if you want to show up and do karaoke, then no one's going to stop you. But yeah, tickets are limited. We're thoroughly encouraging everybody that is, especially if you're local to the area, sign up, come hang out with us. There's going to be a whole bunch of fun going on that day. It'll be a great event.
There's going to be a lot of raffles. There's going to be karaoke afterwards. They've got a bar, which is included in your ticket for $55. You get a drink ticket. You get a raffle ticket. They're going to be giving off. They told me not to tell anybody, but it's going to be a mystery booster they're going to do as a secret one. They're going to have a new Capenna, and I don't know the third one. Doesn't
it's
matter.
It's worth showing There's up a just, lot to of boxes. Just to hear Anthony sing is worth it.
Yeah, I'm going to sing. I'm going to do it. I'm gonna don't stop believing. Little Journey. All right.
Don't stop believing.
Now we're going to do the thing that we always do here at UberCube, and we're going to enjoy our libations of the show. So, May, what are you having on this delightful afternoon slash rainy day in North Carolina slash Iowa, wherever you're at?
I am just having some Costco wines. Nice Cabernet. So,
sounds good to me. I'm going back to my classic. It's the Coffee Porter, the Hidden Pipe. This is just basically my go-to right now. It's from Raleigh Brewing Company. It's incredible. I can't say any more great things about it. I love it.
It sounds so good. I think I'm going to do the same thing.
Do it up.
Let's crack them.
Let's crack them. We should give a shout out to the Cali Cube Champs. Tickets are on sale. They went on sale March 16th. This is an event in Santa Rosa, California on June 1st and 2nd. This is the event outside of obviously our event where you get to play Aqua's. Vintage mm-hmm. Cube
we
in the top 8, which we talked about in one of our previous
and
episodes.
And you get a KubeCon ticket, and it only costs $50, so they're out budgeting us already at the UberCube event.
But they don't get to hear you singing karaoke.
They do not. So that additional $5 negative. Is so worth
it. That is worth it.
May and I are going to do a duet. It's going to be amazing, so it's worth the extra $5.
I can't wait. And obviously KubeCon, October 17th to the 20th, 2024, Madison, Wisconsin.
Get those tickets,
cube submissions in. Get those tickets. May, what is a parasite?
It means relating to and having the habit of a parasite living on another organism and caused by the resulting effect of parasites. So that's what it means to be parasitic in an actual context. However, we're not here to talk about the actual parasites. We're not going to be bringing out the jars. Sorry to disappoint you all. But we're actually talking about it in the context of Cube, obviously. And usually in the context of Cube, it's usually a mechanic that's considered parasitic when it only interacts with itself within a particular set of magic. So, for example, let's say horsemanship is just one of the key ones where it only interacts with other horsemanship. Or, just for relevant for future of our conversation of energy counters, so...
Make horsemanship great again. I'm just going to say that. Make horsemanship.
If we don't see that,
include that in your cube.
Well, if we don't see that in the new set with the cowboys and cowgirls in it, I don't know what to say because the junction, whatever it is,
horsemanship 2.0.
Oh my goodness,
it's so fitting.
Yeah.
We need deserts and horses.
Oh yeah, and spurs. Let's go. So this question kind of evolved from this interaction that we had with our good friend Stephen Cohen of Hall on the Discord, and Whenever Fallout came out, they released multiple cards in their commander sets and others that had energy in it. One of those sets that amongst ourselves we have grumbled that we felt, this is us doing a little bit of our incorrect future sight conversationally, is that that was a mistake, that Wizards would never print another type of token that you can't interact with outside of the game, blah, blah, blah. It came out in Kaladesh. And I had once actually supported it within Uber Bear's artifact cube for a hot minute, only to find out that it was, at the time, seemingly disjointed, as in it wasn't really following the properties of the cube. It's almost like everything in Kaladesh, whether it could be a human that got some kind of haste effect, or it was another human that drew a card and lost a life, or it was some kind of elephant that bounced that had energy counters on top of some machine. So it was really strangely like a set situational mechanic that I try to support, because I did start building the artifact cube roundabouts of Kaladesh, right? So I wanted to introduce it. May, you have a thought?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that what's difficult about specifically energy counters for a lot of environments, and specifically in the artifact cube, is that it tends to play its own game. It doesn't actually further what your theming is with artifacts. It doesn't actually improve your theming of all the other archetypes. It is just playing its own game, and if people are drafting into it, it means that they have to either be really hard into the energy counters, or have just playable ones that are just playable enough and ignore the energy counters altogether. And it's just difficult to work into your environment.
And it's kind of sub-gamey within itself, right? It's not like Monarchy, as an example, where you're kind of battling with the other player. With this sub-game, it's just a kind of a sub-game within your own deck. You know, within the own your own archetype that you've got within the cube, how good, how bad can that be? I don't know. I'll leave that up to you guys.
Interesting juxtaposition about what kind of happened with Fallout is they kind of improved the mechanic. Whereas, again, in Kaladesh, it was an energy source to, I guess, supply everything. It was whatever the Aetherborn or they were all using throughout that entire fair or the lore of whatever was happening in Kaladesh.
Right.
Whereas you go to Fallout, it's actually powering the majority of machines. So it leans harder back into the artifacts. And that's where the comment kind of came from on my part was, oh, dang, you know, I had taken it out. And now I should put it back in. And then I immediately released the word paradisism into the conversation. And Stephen Coleman Fall responded to said word, right? What do you mean by that? Mm-hmm. And to paraphrase it. And that's kind of where this conversation spawned from. I was wanting to talk about it. So thank you, Stephen, for he was kind of checking me on my statement of just simply broad stroke calling it paradisism without really any context to my statement. I was just a term of reference that Stu and I were kind of pre-gaming about that I feel has in the spear of cube has a negative kind of connotation, you know, affixed to it.
I agree.
Right? It's not a beautiful term.
I dislike the term. I think isolated could possibly be a better term to use a card. Do you want to say a card or even a set of cards as a, you know, that contain a mechanic or a keyword or whatever that can exist within a cube? I think I certainly have played. I think the Vintage Cube even by itself is a great example of cards that are in there that have kind of isolated, that have that parasitic nature about them, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing when it comes to the cube or when it comes to the card choice. And I will say I generally dislike terms that inherently sound negative because I don't know. It seems like that's a bad thing that card is in that cube or that mechanic is in that cube. And certainly in the grand scheme of things, right? To call energy parasitic or to call, you know, we're going to obviously cover this as we go through the episode, but something isn't necessarily parasitic just because it may exist on an island, right? You don't know what the rest of the cube looks like. You don't know what the support is. So yes, sure, the mechanic could be parasitic in the grand scheme of things. Does it have to be parasitic within the cube? Not necessarily. And even if it is, does that make it a bad thing? I don't think so.
So we try to use terms in the cube community, and May and I talk about that. We use a lot of jargon, right? It's internalized jargon. We try to find words that are magic oriented that also apply to cube so that we can communicate across a broad spectrum of individuals to make a statement, right? So like, Paradisism has become a very synonymous term with a card that's kind of an outlier, or an archetype rather, that's an outlier that doesn't quite fit or goes on rails. That's kind of really distilling down the statement, but we do need, as a cube community, and May, I'm going to ask the question of you here in a second, how do we define terms within our community so that we can speak on the same level, right? We're kind of wanting a Rosetta Stone as a communication point. So I'm going to ask the question, May, what does paradisism mean to you as a cube curator?
What it means specifically to me is that it is a mechanic that can only exist if you are specifically drafting it. And the reason why I would call it a parasite is that it is inherently leeching drafting cards off of your cube. It is essentially this external force inside of your cube that doesn't play with the other pieces, but only plays with itself, but feeds those picks. So let's just take Typal for an example, right? I love Typal cubes. Obviously, the Fae cube is very Typal. But it can very easily become parasitic because when you include things just like the miscellaneous lords or whatnot. So let's say, not that I'm ever going to include it, but like Goblin King, right? All the other goblins now just have +1/+1 and Mountain Walk. Okay, great. What other decks actually want that Goblin King? None. Only the Goblin deck wants Goblin King. And that is where the parasitism lies, because it is essentially this external force taking a slot in your pack for a deck that you're probably not playing.
I would agree with that. I actually experienced something very similar in the Horror Cube that I have, aka Uber Bear's Horror Cube. And what I experienced within that is an oversaturation of lords, like you said, where I wanted lords to buff certain typal aspects to have that kindred type of relationship. But it wasn't too hard to notice that they became dead cards in the draft, because some card that says +1/+1 to all zombies doesn't do anything to the person who's drafting the group of, or the faction of, vampires in that scenario, right? So
right.
I can see your point with the Goblin King. That makes a lot of sense to me. That's an interesting way of looking at that I did not include in the original note. So you can see
I think you did. And that's why I'm going to jump the script a bit and talk about one of those cards that came up, which was Liberty Prime Recharged, which is 2BW/WW for a legendary artifact creature robot. Vigilance, Trample, Haste. Whenever it attacks or blocks, sacrifice it unless you pay 2 energy. You can pay 2 colorless, tap it, sacrifice an artifact, and get 2 energy. Draw a card. So this screams that it cares about energy counters. It's the energy counter focus. And when you have a bunch of those energy counters, it can feel pretty good to play. However, it is also self-contained. It creates the thing that it needs in order to do the thing. You're always getting cards. You're always going to be able to use those energy counters to make it so that way, you know, it can actually attack and block. So when you have self-include mechanics like this, it actually pulls itself back out of paradisism. I have a bit of a curveball card, because it was discussed a lot back in when AFR came out, and with cube discussions kind of changing with how mechanics have been introduced nowadays. And the dungeon mechanic was a big thing, where it's another example of just that kind of insular mechanic that takes up spots. And if you're not playing the dungeon deck, then you just kind of have a mediocre card. However, a card that people really looked at and started throwing into some of their cubes was Nadara, Selfless Paladin. 2WW, legendary creature, dragon knight, vigilance. Whenever it enters the battlefield or attacks, venture to the dungeon, and when you've completed a dungeon, all other creatures you control get +1/+1. And the reason why that card works is because by itself, it moves through the dungeon. By itself, it creates its own payoff. And with the dungeon in specific, you are able to create the creature tokens that support Nadar. So it made a lot of sense for this card, insularly speaking, to be fine enough as a pick on its own. But if I were to throw you some other card that just says ventured into the dungeon, most people aren't going to consider that for their keeps.
So it's able to be standalone, therefore break away from that. So it's not, and I want to reference our good friend ChillMTG that kind of talked about this in the video very specifically, is that paradisism isn't necessarily correlated directly to a card. And I think he very eloquently defined that. It's defined as a mechanic, which is interesting. Mm. I wanted to bring up a point. On a kind of a side note, it's interesting how when we get the introduction of a new mechanic, And we wonder if Wizards is ever going to print it again, thereby ergo becomes parasitic if you try to include it in a cube. For example, in the way back, whenever Food was first released, we didn't know if it was going to continue to be released. And you've cited on multiple occasions that you wanted more food. Wizards, give me more food. Well, now they're giving you all the food you want, right? But oh, yeah. In the way back, Food wasn't weaponized. It was just gaining life. And then they knew in their long-term plans over the course of their set development and through R&D that eventually they'll start making cards that supported that mechanic because they tested it and it was beloved.
I think you could argue that there has been always some support for a high density of artifacts. So maybe that wasn't quite out on the island, if you will, that some of these others that we're talking about could be. But I agree. Food was one of those like, oh, I get an artifact. I get to sack it with two mana and gain three life. Like, okay, great. Now what do I do with it? Right. But like you say, now there's a ton of other support.
So you could do like artifact count matters. You could absolutely do metal craft and all these things. Of right. Course, but yeah. If you're looking at it in a vacuum, it was tap, gain three life. And that was kind of the summary of it. What was the set with all the fairies and the knights and all that you love so much, May?
Eldraine.
There we go. Eldraine kind of released that and then put it out there. And all we got to see was Oko do this complete devastation of the world, right? And make elks. Everybody just skipped right over Food like it was not even there as a speed bump. Would you agree, Stu?
I mean, Soul Tie Food was a very prominent deck for a lot of environments during that time. But the reason why Food worked is because there were ways to make food weaponizable, if that makes sense.
Oko by
itself. As opposed to energy counters, where you can't really interact with it. Sure, you could proliferate it, but at the end of the day, you have to go a lot more out of your way to manipulate an energy counter than you do to manipulate an extra game object. So it really shows kind of how our definition of parasitism is more of a spectrum than it is just a high contrasted example where it's not as cut and dry as we want it to be. And that's okay.
And cheating off of Chill's homework again, he took the individual cards and he classified them as narrow and broad, which is basically, we talked about it, was acute and obtuse is another way of doing it, or whether or not the card, whenever it was broad, it became homogenized. There's a lot of way to look at it. And he cited cards like Ponder in his video and talked about Path to Exile, Lightning Bolt, and he put those on the high, I guess, versatility spectrum, making them capable of working on this stuff. But then on the other end of the tier, he went into Sulfuric Vortex, which goes into an interesting kind of limited amount of interactability within a cube, or it has a certain purpose. But then he didn't define Sulfuric Vortex, which we'll read in a few minutes, as a card that was in itself parasitic, but rather what it was trying to message was parasitic, if that makes sense, is an individual, or rather it's narrow in classification. And I think that's what's interesting about the subjective nature of the statement. That's kind of what, to kind of pull it back for a minute, when we're talking about it, we're using the term that we're using as kind of the air quotes Rosetta Stone so that I can communicate to May and Stu can communicate to me, and they use the term parasitic opposed to air quotes again, I guess weaponizing that term whenever a card or a certain gameplay is not working out for you. And we're going to have some examples of that where people use the term parasitic, not in the term where we're using it as a, I guess, a polite way of communicating amongst friends that this card is not right for your environment, rather.
I think
empirical data versus subjective or maybe emotional.
And I think this is why I have a little bit of a problem with the negative connotation of the term, right? I understand the sentiment that Sulfuric Vortex is parasitic because it only is there to exist in a deck that is very likely to be mono red, maybe red white, where you are trying to be as aggressive as possible and dump all of your creatures, all of your prowess creatures, and you're trying to win as fast as possible, right? The reason why that was, as an example, a staple in the Vintage Cube for a long time was because mono red aggressive decks where you're throwing down the Monastery Swift Spears and the Goblin Guides and banging people with Lightning Bolt and Chain Lightning and then putting down Sulfuric Vortex was a very legitimate and high powered way that you are going to win the game. That doesn't necessarily mean that Sulfuric Vortex has to be parasitic just because it only exists in that deck. A lot of those cards only existed as they did in that cube environment because they enabled a very, very clear and aggressive and powerful strategy to win games of Magic, right? Monastery Swift Spear is a 1-2 for one, which is fine. It has prowess and haste, which is fine, but it's good because it has all these other pieces that are enablers as part of it. So what do you want to do? Do you want to say that Sulfuric Vortex is the parasite, or do you want to say that Sulfuric Vortex and Garbling Guide and Monastery Swift Spear and whatever else exists? Sure, you could exclude Lightning Bolt. And this is where kind of the broad to narrow discussion comes from, right? Lightning Bolt is very broad. It's amazing removal. Sulfuric Vortex only exists because of that strategy. So maybe it's the strategy that is defining just how parasitic a card can be.
For the listeners, Sulfuric Vortex, since we kind of we're bouncing all of the script like nobody's business, is for one colorless and two mountains, you get an enchantment. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, Sulfuric Vortex deals 2 damage to that player. If a player would gain life, that player gains no life instead. May, you have a comment.
Yeah, so I agree with Stu. I think Stu has hit the hammer on the head. Nail on the head. With the
you hit the, whatever. The nail, you hit the hammer on the head. We got it.
Hammer on the head. Perfect. But the important part is that when you're looking at cards and trying to determine whether or not certain cards, certain archetypes, etc., are parasitic, the boring, very, very uninspired answer of context matters. I understand that that's not an exciting answer. That's not a direct answer. It's not as cut and dry as you might
it's
like
the
it.
Correct answer.
It depends entirely on what your environment is. Agreed. And the reality is that what Stu was alluding to was that at what point is a card being parasitic, or is it just being a payoff?
Well, that's kind of what I want to chain into. You both picked this up so well. So let's take Sulfuric Vortex one more time. I'm going to read it again just for the funsies.
I'll read it because it's my favorite card. Can
do
I
it,
read it?
Do it, yes.
Not really my favorite card.
Parasitism, so got it.
One colorless, 2 red, enchantment. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, Sulfuric Vortex deals 2 damage to that player. But here's the important one, Anthony. I'm gonna hope that I'm going to chain off what your next thought might be. If a player would gain life, that player gains no life instead.
Okay, so let's do the context thing that May just talked about. What if we took this and got rid of, I want everybody to do the little board up in their mind. They're moving the pieces around. You know how they do in the sci-fi movies?
This is the Charlie deconstructing something.
Yeah. Now. Okay. So we're going to tear this down. So get rid of Goblin Guide. We're not using that. We have a bolt. We're going to kind of push that over to the right. We got a char. Nope, we don't have a char. Get rid of that. We're not doing that anymore. We're not doing Vintage Cube. We're not doing a Legacy Cube. We're not doing that. Let's take it into a thematic concept. I'm going to go with Uber Bear's Horror Cube. I'm now tossing in some vampires. What mechanic do vampires do as a kind of a concept? What do they like to do? What does a vampire like to do?
They like to leech your life. They suck your blood. They're lifelink.
Yeah. So lifelink actually, so that changes the parameters of this card, where now it's not in there to be a hate card towards lifelink, but rather it's kind of, you don't really want to encourage the life gain aspect with your Orzhov vampires. Now you're kind of going into the Rakdos type of vampires where they're not doing the life gain. You're not doing the blood artist anymore. You're not doing all these different type of aristocrat type things. And you're switching gears to that aggressive strategy, but you're turning off your direct opponent in that environment where they're all lower tier. The blood artist, right? The Zulaport cutthroats, things like that. Stuff that does life exchange. So I look at this from the secondary component. That 2 damage is just like a little clock that whatever, boop, boop.
Hurts.
It hurts more when you're being hyper-aggressive in that mono-red deck that Stu designed in my Power Vintage Cube the other day, which is sick. But it changes the context that May said, where you now drop it in with some vampires and things that are doing life gain, or Shadow Spear and these type of things, right? Mm-hmm. It really changes the dynamic of this card. I think that really points at what Chill was saying. It's not the card in itself that's parasitic, air quotes, but rather it's narrow or broad, but then we take the mechanic as a whole and drop it in there. Because I wanted to kind of counter debate. I think Sulfuric Vortex has a lot of conversation attached to it.
I do too. I actually want to go back, if we will, to the energy as well, right? Mm. As parasitic as this may be, right? If you've got these isolated examples, right? So again, and I want to talk about energy specifically related to Liberty Prime Recharged. So this is a pip card from the Fallout series. 2 colors, blue, red, white, Vigilance, Trample, Haste. When it attacks or blocks, sack it unless you pay 2 energy. Pay 2, sack an artifact, you get 2 energy. It's a 5-mana, 8/8, Vigilance, Trample, Haste. You know why I want this in my cube? Because it is fun as hell. It's an 8/8. The parasitic nature of energy, be damned. I don't really care. I'll include something like this in my cube because it is fun. And so now let's look at the other example that we have here in the show notes. This is Dr. Madison Lee. This is a blue, red, white, so 3-mana, legendary creature, human scientist, 2/3. Whenever you cast an artifact spell, you get 1 energy. Tap, pay an energy, target creature gets +1/+0 and gains trample and haste until end of turn. Tap and pay 3 energy, draw a card. Tap and pay 5 energy, return target artifact card from your graveyard to the battlefield, tapped. These are fun cards, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How much do I really care about the parasitism?
With those cards, no. I wouldn't.
Do I care about
them? In most contexts, they support themselves. Except...
Exactly.
Except in the only situation in which if you put this into a cube that does not have enough artifacts, then all of a sudden, it's no longer a good card there.
Now we're kind of getting away from the
parasitism issue.
Now we're kind of talking about, should this card be there if you just don't have enough support for that, right? Because a 3/2 with all the other abilities just being negated, right? Kind of not very exciting, right? But if you're including something because, right, you want to have some support for it, and you don't need to have tons of support for it. Even just a couple of cards might just be enough to be an enabler for something that's so powerful.
I want to lean back into this again. So whenever Energy first came out in Kaladesh, yes, there were stuff like Aetherworks Marvel that was for 4 colorless. You got a legendary artifact. Whenever a permanent you control gets put into the graveyard, you get an energy. Then you could tap it and pay 6 energy. Look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may cast a card from among them without paying its mana cost. Put the rest on the bottom of the library. I know that this actually made it in some decks. This thing was doing work at one point.
What a good card.
But
it's a great card.
Then to the juxtaposition, although a good card, this is where Kaladesh was kind of giving everybody energy. Lightning Runner for 3 colorless and red, you get a creature human warrior for a 2/2 double strike, first strike haste. Whenever Lightning Runner attacks, you get 2 energy. Then you may pay
8
energy.
8 energy.
I had to pause because I had to count that in my head. Oh my gosh, so many. They couldn't even do like the number 8. If you pay, untap all creatures you control, and after that phase, an additional combat phase. For me as a curator running the artifact cube, right, I could lean more into the Aetherworks Marvel, but I also tried to do the Lightning Runner. So as May stated, it started getting this formation was disjointed. Didn't make any sense, right? Sure. I was just doing energy for energy's sake at a certain point, opposed to going back to what you said earlier in the episode when we were talking about artifact matters, where I could have leaned into something like Aetherworks Marvel, but they didn't support enough of it in Singleton that I couldn't break away from that. So I was leaning in to get more energy by doing these other creatures that were non-artifact, thereby not supporting the cube. It was just interesting. Then we switch over now to Fallout, where they lean back into most of the energy is actually dedicated towards the idea of artifacts.
Lots of energy.
They centralized. They took this entire context where it was all over the place in Kaladesh for the big fair, right? And then they took it, now they've honed it back in. Well, we're in the Fallout universe, and we're going to run our machines off of energy, not every elephant or leopard or whatever they were doing back in Kaladesh, right? And you got a
I think it had something to do with the Aether.
Yeah, it was something to do with that, some lore stuff. But it's interesting because in the first set, you look at it as parasitism. Now we've expanded it, which leads me to my next point. When we start getting more introduction of a mechanic, then we have more options as curators, and then thereby we can kind of reduce the idea of parasitism and make it more introduced, more natural, organic to a cube if it's themed out as such.
But then the challenge is, should you have included it in the first place, right? If you want to stick with that negative connotation about it, or should you just wait until there is appropriate support for it?
But you don't know that. That's you what's don't. Interesting. Going back to exactly. Food, when we said when that came out, we didn't know they're going to make more food because they're testing an idea with the public. That's what's so interesting about these ideas. And then it catches on. We never thought in the Wayback Machine they would ever reprint energy again. And so, then, boom.
Here's the thing that I kind of want to push back a little bit with. Aetherworks Marvel works because without any other cards, it makes its own energy. While Lightning Runner also makes energy, Aetherworks Marvel was a payoff for getting a bunch of permanents into the graveyard. How Aetherworks Marvel really took off was because you were able to just generate a lot of that energy just off that card. Sure, you could accelerate it when you had other energy cards, and that's part of that parasitism that matters. But when you look at Lightning Runner, four turns is a lot of turns of attacking with 2-2 double strike with haste. That's a lot of turns. Even in limited, that's a lot of turns. It is so hard to get the payoff. The juice is not worth the squeeze. And the problem is that Aetherworks Marvel, you're just getting juice for every little thing that you're doing. Versus every time you attack is such a small amount of time, relatively speaking. And that's why it's important to remember that the context of your environment and the context of the card within that environment is what makes it parasitic, rather than it just being a thing that you tack on, you know?
So, this was a community response episode. That's kind of what we had alluded to here. I posted out on all of the different socials the question, defining parasitism in Cube. Question for the community, what cards or archetypes would you define as parasitic? Second question, do you feel that this term fairly defines the nature or use case of a card or mechanic? Lastly, is this term that you use personally during card discussions? Question mark. And so we posted that up on Reddit, we posted that up on the Facebook, we posted that up on the Discords, and here's what we received, because we kind of wanted to take all of these ideas and bundle them up in one. What we got for top examples provided by the community was stuff like Splice into Arcane, which includes Kadama's Reach and Through the Breach. Also, we got Energy, which we've talked about extensively at this point. We also got Storm. We're going to have some of that action. Stu's kind of twitching.
Storm, I agree with 100%. There's a few cards that I think are kind of parasitic for Storm. I think that's become less so. And I actually think there's way less parasitic Storm cards than maybe they have the reputation for. But
and then
sure.
We got Horsemanship is one of the list. And we got Infect. And then we got an interesting one called Metalcraft or Steel Overseer for an example of an individual card, which we'll talk about here shortly. But it's interesting that this was kind of the top responses we got in different stories that we're about to tell. So let's start out with the first one by our good friend Bones.
So from Lucky Luda. Insular mechanics like Splice onto Arcane always come to mind first, but as much as I love it, Typal themes are the big one. It makes you a lot less flexible in the draft, except for the supporting removal spells and maybe Changeling. But once you start on Goblins Matter, it makes you want to go deeper on the same theme, and the cards won't appeal to anyone not doing that theme. They've gotten a lot better in recent design, though. I think there's an argument for that, but I also think there's plenty of spells that I think work in other, like Goblin, I'll talk about Goblin Bombardment, I think is an easy sort of low-hanging fruit for that, right? It's a Goblin card. Yes, it's very Goblin typal. You're flinging those Goblins at whatever target, but there's plenty of examples where you might just be getting a whole bunch of tokens that aren't necessarily Goblins, and that works. Now, going back to May's original point of the whole Goblin King thing, where, yes, Goblin King, you could consider that parasitic because it only works with Goblins. But let's look at the success of the Fey Cube. Again, that is a very typal cube environment. Just because a cube is typal-centric, and there may be examples of a very, very highly typal-centric cards that are in there, just because they're parasitic doesn't mean they're a negative. And I think this goes back to the parasitic is a negative term, whereby the parasitic cards aren't necessarily negative when you look at them in the vacuum of that cube.
And I think to reiterate that, it's important to note that you as the curator need to ask yourself, is this the payoff or is this the parasite? And when people are going to be drafting their decks, there's always going to be a deck that somebody's just not wanting to play. That's just how it is, which leads into one of the comments down below in response to Ashen Crow. Ashen Crow was saying to me, it's more of a buzzword in the community than anything else. Very few mechanics are actually parasitic by R&D's definition. A lot of cards have trouble working by themselves, but doesn't seem reasonable to me to call them parasitic of that, because of that. Life of the Loam is more of a narrow card than Voltaic Brawler. But then the response I really liked from Preferred Selection was, People want an explanation for why some cards get taken for 13 to 15th, but no matter how much you tune your cube, there will always be a 15th pick. If the 15th pick is a sweet card like Life from the Loam, where it's good, but not everyone always drafts the deck, it goes in, and that's fine. And I think that that's the important context. There was a deck that was notorious for a long time in the cube space known as the Wildfire deck, where it took a lot of deck spaces in order to make the Wildfire deck work. But when you see Wildfire come up in the pack, it is the payoff for the Wildfire deck. It is Wildfire. Sure, we could say that it could have a parasitic quality because of how many slots that it requires in order to make that deck work. But just because people aren't drafting it doesn't mean that it shouldn't exist.
I actually think the draft can be quite misleading at times as well. Because I will say quite certainly there's plenty of times that I've drafted a variety of cubes where I look at a card and I think that might be a quote-unquote parasitic card because it exists on this little island out there for maybe a single archetype. But if I'm the one drafting that archetype, you know what I'm fairly confident of? That card isn't going anywhere, right? 8 cards are going to be drafted, including mine. If I get the rest of that pack back, and there's 9 or more cards left in it, I am probably going to get that card back. And I am more likely to say, Life from the Loam is probably coming back to me, or whatever the parasitic card that I'm looking at. And I can take a fetch land or something else that's maybe not necessarily higher value, but just another card that I also want within the cube that I'm drafting because I'm confident that that card is coming back. So I couldn't agree more. I think there is always going to be a 15th pick, but that doesn't always necessarily associate with power level. Sometimes it's just confidence within the drafter that that card is going to come back.
I want to go back to Bones' statement where he's talking about Splice into Arcane and then kind of went into the typo argument. But essentially, he was saying Insular Mechanics Splice into the Arcane, for example. But I'm going to give you a card that has that on it that no one cares about because it's additive distraction. And I'm going to make that argument now. Through the Breach, for 4 colorless and 1 red, you get an instant Arcane. You may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. That creature gains haste. Sacrifice that creature at the beginning of the next end step. Or here's the additive distraction slash parasitic term, Splice an Arcane for 2 colorless and 2 red. As you cast an arcane spell, you may reveal this card from your hand and pay its splice cost. If you do, add this card's effects to that spell. So I was talking to our good friend Chris, aka Samich, and he's like, you could technically do Kadama's Reach and
Splice Through the Breach.
Splice Through the Breach onto Absolutely. It. Don't know why you'd want to, but I would say that no one cares. They do
you
not
know why
run
you'd want
it-
to put an Atraxa into play.
Sure, but nobody runs this card for those properties is what I'm saying. That Splice and Arcane, as far as an argument, is the additive distraction opposed to Parasitism, because I find those cards, nobody leans into that anyways. It was a one of parasitic in nature, but no one's going to play that mechanic. They're going to actually look at that first order of those terms.
No one cares about Splice onto Arcane with Through the Breach. They care because they're putting an Atraxa or a, you know, an Atali or an Archon of Cruelty right. into play, right? It's not even gravy. It's like a little speck of mustard on the plate that you might dip your chicken breast into. Like, come on.
I like mustard.
I like mustard, too. So let's move on to the next one, right? I love this one. This is from Boo Titan. Context defines how parasitic something is. Energy in a vacuum is parasitic. It's a mechanic where many of the cards get maybe a one-time effect that can be triggered again if you include other cards with the mechanic. But then maybe your cube also has multiple counter-based cards. So we have proliferate and effects that power up based on the different counters floating around. Now it becomes a little easier to splash these kinds of cards into decks without being dedicated. Personally, if a card can only go in one kind of deck, it has to either be a multicolor signpost card or be a strong payoff. Otherwise, I'm probably looking elsewhere for something that can cross over with other strategies. And I will ask this as well. If a card is parasitic, but it's also a payoff, how does that work, right? Because if a card is a payoff, but it's parasitic, so it exists somewhere, what kind of mechanics, what kind of abilities does that payoff card has that puts it so much out there on this island, right, as a parasite, that it is considered that within the context of that cube? Like, can you, I don't know, May, Anthony, well, give me an example.
I'll give you an example that we talked about in a recent episode where May was talking to our good friend Nathan about his almost legendary cube featured at the Ubercube event. And one of the cards that May said was, he's running Berserk. Why aren't you running Skittles? You remember this conversation, May?
Yep, I remember that conversation.
And it kind of came up with, well, sure, you could have Berserk and you could try to kill somebody with Infect in that scenario, but then you need all these other supplementary type, this other cast to help that card lift it up. You can't just do Skittles as a one-off because I think it does 4 damage, right? Am I wrong on that? I'm not looking at the card right now. But then you had to proliferate it and then proliferate it to kill them kind of thing. And it got weird. And or you had to get multiple attacks or Berserk them. So that would be a really good case where if in the context of the almost legendary cube, he decided to run Skittles and be the only Infect creature, then regardless of whether or not you want to say one card equals Paradisism, it would definitely, if it's not that, I would almost call it a trap where you had to have supporting cast.
That is my point, exactly. At that point, is it really a parasite in a cube? I actually think that that is a great word to describe it. It is a trap. It is a card that has been put in the cube for what might seemingly just be no reason whatsoever, right? Why have I got this Infect? And I'm someone that likes to look at those payoff, those big, you know, reason why I would go into an archetype kind of drafters, right? Okay, I've got a Skitherix. Cool. That must mean Infect or some way to power up this card must exist in this cube. If it doesn't exist, I think that's even outside of the parasitism at that point. It's just this might not be a very good card for your cube.
So taking Infect and Toxic into account, we can actually do a new application of that where they made that kind of come to life, where it was one point Infect creatures were so small, you had to have cards like Berserk to actually carry them to the finish line so you can get that 10 poison on somebody, where we can take an environment and contextually place them. Let's do the squares that cube. They talked about recently at their event, they had a cube called All Hail Lord Yawgmoth, I think it was, where they actually leaned into the Phyrexian lore and they put all the toxic and the Infect creatures in there. I think contextualizing that idea, it would be hard to call that parasitic because it's actually like a major theme of the cube.
Well,
right?
Of course.
It's a lane.
If it's multiple, well supported.
Multi-lane.
Yeah, if it's well supported, then it's not a parasite anymore, right? It's just a supported archetype within the cube.
So it's not this one-off deck that says all detectives get +1/+1. In the example of a draft I did last night, now you actually have a cube that's formed around an entire idea, a theme. You could even do that with energy. If your cube was highly supportive of the energy theme and leaned into it so heavily, it'd be hard to say that it's the large percentage of it. The volume matters, I think, just as much as the context.
I think the volume is the most important thing.
To defend myself a little bit, the context of it could have been a Blighted Agent. It could have been anything within that slot. But there was a lot of combat tricks in there that just felt out of place because of what they did without actually having the payoff for them in that context. And key places like that are what we're referring to when it comes to the subjectivity of parasitism. And I think that I can narrow the topic down, hopefully in a relatively clean way, of just saying that something being parasitic is the status, not the condition. It can currently be parasitic. It can currently not be parasitic. It's not always one or the other. And sometimes it usually just depends on what the card's doing, what the environment is doing, and what everything else to apply to that archetype card, whatever, that you're trying to question. And like we've mentioned before, at what point is it a payoff, and at what point is it a parasite? And that's something that you have to be willing to ask as a curator.
So I want to lean into another community response we got from the Seawall off of Reddit. Parasitic means how insular a mechanic is. If it can only be played with things from this set, it is considered parasitic. For example, Champions of Kamigawa, Splice and Arcane, which we talked about, was parasitic because it required arcane spells, of which 100% were in the block. So technically, it is impossible to be parasitic in cube. I like that response. The MTG community has conflated parasitic with linear, cards being one that encourages you to play with a specific set of cards. Goblin King, for instance, says play this with goblins. The opposite are modular cards, which don't encourage specific other cards to play with it. Now I'm going to push back on that one. I've taken modular and have awoken that within my artifact cube as a major theme. That was going to be something that was going to be my list. It does say modular, for those who aren't familiar, when the creature dies, it takes its counters and places it on another artifact creature, if I'm not mistaken. Or, yeah, so I got that right. So it kind of transplants the stuff, but that doesn't do any good going back to if you don't support artifacts. It could be, in a nutshell, a parasitic-type mechanic. Going back to not only is context matters, but volume matters. Being aware of linear cards in your cube is important because too many result in drafts on rails. I've seen that oftentimes being defined as parasitic. So whenever you're passing around cards that says, in order to do this, you must take all the poison cards, you're kind of taking away the drafter's agency. If they want to lean into that, they have to get the most density of that to make their deck effective, else they fall backwards. So that includes both the poison and the toxic, as you said, proliferation and or combat tricks. Because a lot of those aren't self-sustaining. They're not standalone in a vacuum. Like you talked about with Aetherworks Marvel could do its own work. A lot of times with toxic or poison, you have to be able to have something to supplement it, making it parasitic if you don't support it heavily. Would you agree with that statement, May?
Yeah. So it's interesting that we both kind of covered the Goblin King just because it's such a good example. But it's a matter of that's where the context matters. And when you have type of things of conflating whether or not the drafters being on rails is the same as a drafter seeing an archetype that's parasitic. And it usually just depends on whether or not we're determining the context being is a parasitic to the draft, is a parasitic to the cube. And I would agree that in terms of parasitism to the cube, that it's very, very difficult unless it's undersupported.
Now, I will say that David Bowie was not very nice to Sarah.
Keep what going. Does this have any?
It's the Labyrinth anyways. Reference. Come on, the Goblin King.
Yes, I got the Labyrinth reference.
All right.
Anyways.
So this is our final bit of community feedback that we're going to talk about. And this is a bit of a thread. So this goes back and forth. But I like the interaction, right? So it starts off with this. I've been arguing this with a big friend of mine for a while. My claim, Storm is parasitic. Only one player is having fun. Question mark? Usually there's little to nothing you can do once the deck started going. Don't know if I agree with that. Sure. Some of the cards only work in that specific archetype. Agree with that a little bit. And it's irrelevant who's winning or who has the advantage. It's like playing solitaire.
That's from Nico039.
Yes.
Off of Reddit.
His claim, Storm is not parasitic, is a must in vintage Power Cube environment. I don't think anything's a must, so I'm gonna say it's a very common competitive deck. Absolutely, it's the most skillful deck to draft, build, and pilot. I don't know about that either, but it's definitely a technical deck, and it can easily be killed by White Weenie Mono Red. I'm gonna argue not anymore. Then we go on to the next comment, and I love this. Storm is parasitic because it requires a ton of cards no other deck wants, yep. Like rituals. I cannot even say how much I disagree with that statement.
I do disagree with that too.
I disagree with it completely. There's no way that you're going to tell me that no other deck wants Dark Ritual. You're not even going to tell me that no other deck wants Seething Song, right? Even
Seething
the Red
Song
rituals,
lets you cast Kiki Jiki like super fast.
It does. There's a lot of very good red cards. Right? You can put out a Glory Bringer even if you're just playing a red aggressive deck.
Yep.
No other deck
nothing
is interesting.
Nothing feels better than Dark Ritualing into, what, I don't know, Braids?
Dark Ritualing into Shouldred.
Into Entomb.
Dark Ritual, Thought Seize, Entomb, Reanimate. Yes, thank you.
There are so many good things that you could do with the Dark Ritual that, no, not only Storm cares about.
So taking this in the Wayback Machine, though, I will say the old Storm, I'm talking about Storm circa 5 years ago, this would have made sense. I would say that Storm has been refined by curators at this point, by people like LSV and by MTGO working on it a lot harder to refine it.
No,
and I think it's cleaner now.
I disagree. I think it's a product of Wizards printing the kind of cards that it has. I don't think it hasn't been refined by content creators. It's been refined by Wizards. But let's be real. The old school Ad Nauseam Tendrils, Epic Storm, right? Kind of Storm decks where you're winning with Tendrils of Agony. I remember watching and playing Vintage Cube years ago. Those decks were very premium, right? They were incredibly powerful decks. those decks don't get drafted as much anymore. They just don't. I don't know why they just don't. There's not the prevalence to those decks. And finally, just to finish that comment, a mid-range deck will still play Ragavan, right? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Next one. I think a good many of the cards in Storm decks are playable in other decks. Agreed. I also rarely see Storm decks running rituals outside Dark Ritual, which is also broadly playable. Again, that is bang on the money. Each deck also has its cards. No one is playing Hellrider or Fire Blast outside Mono Red. Agree with that. I think Hellrider, you've really got to be working hard with either a very, very aggressive Mono Red deck, maybe red with a splash as like an Inti deck, something along those lines. And obviously, I'm very focused on the Power Cube right now, but I think that's very fair. And finally, Hellrider and Fire Blast are also parasitic, correct? It's okay to run parasitic cards.
Then I'm going to lean back into Chill's statement. Hellrider and Fire Blast are not parasitic. They are narrow. The mechanics, the overarching archetype that they're trying to support, in fact, is the parasitism. Would you agree with that statement? I think that
if we as a community did a better job to give a better definition to the context of those cards individually, rather than trying to throw in jargon for the subjectivity of the environment, and then it always comes down to the boring answer of what's the context? Which are we talking about in a cube? Are we talking about in actual draft? Are we talking about an archetype? Are we talking about one card? And just really narrowing it down to being like, this card is very narrow in its application, or this card is very broad in its application. And so it's good to have narrow cards sometimes.
I agree. And I think this really boils down to this. A card like Ponder, let's go back to that, right? That card is unbelievably broad. Any one of those single mana cantrips, any one of the, you know, your lightning bolts, your ponders, right? Those cards that are not parasitic because they are so broad, they can't be parasitic in nature just because by themselves they represent an amount of value that is completely independent of whatever archetype that you're drafting. If you have a card that is parasitic, or if we're considering it parasitic within the scope of what the criteria might be based on this discussion, for me, it's either one of two things. It's either it exists because it is an enabler or a payoff in an archetype that exists, that is very, very powerful, and therefore just deserves a slot for someone who is willing to take a gamble on the archetype that they're drafting, or it's a bad card and it shouldn't be in your cube.
Interesting.
That's a crappy statement for me to make, I know, because now I've just kind of judged a card that may be out there in other people's cube, and I'm going to apologize if that came across as kind of brash. But I almost feel that's, you know, if a card is so parasitic that's like, hey, that just exists on an island and it hasn't got appropriate support, then why is it there?
I'm going to call it narrow. I'm going to call it a trap. I'm going to go back to my overarching.
Thank you
for parodicism.
Being elegant. Yeah. Much nicer way of putting it.
Yeah, parodicism is the overarching type. Whereas, yeah, I'm going to lean into that. And also, we cheated off of Chill's homework so hard here. But it was interesting. One of the things is you pick Preordain, you pick Ponder, you pick Path to Exile, you pick any of these one pips, and you say they're broad, they're vast, they're homogenous. They can go with any deck. That's interesting. And then Hellrider, even though it's a highly aggressive card that checks on the amount of creatures attacking because it has two colorless and two pips, suddenly becomes, air quotes, parasitic in nature, even though I think it really just kind of boiled down or distilled down to the volume of pips, the cost.
Let's then talk about another card that's not, it's not in the show notes, but I think you could argue that it's somewhat parasitic, right? Let's talk about Zurin Orb. This is a zero mana artifact that lets you sack a land to gain two life. You could certainly argue that that card is parasitic. It absolutely, in my opinion, requires a slot for it to be really justified. I don't think you ever want to include that card just because you want to give players the ability to play an artifact, albeit for free, that allows them to just gain life by sacrificing lands. Maybe it's some anti-aggro strategy or something. The reason why that card is so prevalent and so popular and so powerful in the Vintage Cube is because it combos unbelievably well with cards that allow you to gain infinite life, Titana, and infinite mana.
Titana.
Well, Titania is allows you to get a ton of 5/3s, right? But with something like Fast Bond and then a Crucible effect, Ren and Six doesn't allow you to go infinite because you got to bring the land back. But Fast Bond with a Crucible effect that allows you to just sack lands, bring them back, sack lands, bring them back, right? You've now got infinite mana, infinite life.
So it's interesting you brought up that card because it really signals like lands matter, some kind of combo-centric type thing.
Exactly.
You could argue that it's zero and then it kind of plays into the artifact density, but I think that's a real reach.
That would be
I think it gets into one of those reachy type cards. It's not producing mana. It's not doing anything outside of what it's doing. It's implying a certain thing. I think that leans into a trap. If it's standalone,
it would be in my opinion. Like, if you don't have a way to combo with that, then I'm going to struggle to see why it should take a spot in
your queue. It's 100% signaling that there is a combo here.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I can see that. That's a good point. I think it's a good tie off actually for this episode. So, final thoughts. This is interesting. I put this in here. One person's trash is another person's treasure. I think that really sums up what we're arguing, right? We can go back to the context matters, which people don't seem to want to lean into in the Magic community sometimes. May, would you agree with that statement? It's a hard pill to swallow.
It's because it's a boring answer. People don't like it.
It's so generic. True, though.
it's definitely true.
It is
especially true. In the context of jargon.
Yes, and then Paradisism really leans into mechanics that are insular, not cards. Cards, I think Chill, just I want to keep leaning. It's go watch this video. It'll be in the show notes. So eloquently define this. It's not cards. It's the overarching mechanics and or archetypes. That's how we got it. We got to find a way to really bring this into.
Or types.
It's got to be a jargon that we can all use, right? We can't just use it for every situation.
The couple notes that I want to leave people with is that you need to ask yourself whether or not that this is a payoff, if it's a trap, or is it a parasite? And when you're asking yourself that, you should be asking yourself, is the juice worth the squeeze? How much effort do people have to go through to make this work? Does it work by itself? And if it doesn't work by itself, then why don't you have more support for it? And are you wanting to support it? And that's the core of criticizing what you might observe as parasitic.
I think that's a perfect wrap up.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't have the ability to be that eloquent.
No.
I can read other people's eloquent comments, but I can't make my own.
So, May, tell us about this KubeCon thing. What do we got going on here?
Yeah, so just a reminder to everyone, on March 26th, which is going to be in the past by this episode comes out, make sure that you are submitting your cubes and going onto the KubeCon website and uploading your cubes. And I guarantee you it is worth just throwing it up there. Odds are it's going to be bucket votes. So throw it up there. Put in your submissions and make sure that you have just everything nice and tidy for when you're submitting it.
I would say add a TLDR is pretty important too. I would really highly suggest recommend that because when people are looking at the cube, they kind of want to understand what the cube does intrinsically, right? So if you don't understand what or how to actually do that, say in Cube Cobra, you can reach out to UberCube on our UberCubeMTGpodcast@gmail.com. Send me a message, and I will be glad to share with you some code from some of ours, basically the markdown, so you can see it, so you can build one yourself. I don't mind helping the community that way, because I think it goes a long way to really translate what you're trying to do with your cube. Would you agree with that, May and Stu?
Absolutely. Hey, we're going to be at KubeCon. We want all those primo cubes, right? I like to draft fun and interesting cubes. And for all the curators out there, you obviously have this passion project that you've been working on. You know, treat this as a great opportunity to get some really valuable feedback, especially from a lot of very, very seasoned, experienced and knowledgeable curators. I'm sitting in between two of them right now. Where are they?
I gotta find them.
One of them lives on the street.
There's one over there on the other street.
You don't know him. He doesn't come in. The other one sits. He lives like five streets over. But yeah, so much value to be gained.
He goes to a different school, I swear. Yeah, exactly.
So, Stu, that was great. Thank you very much, May and Stu, for taking on a very complex and robust conversation. As you can see, there's a lot of, I don't want to use the word dissension, but I'm going to use it. Like, there's a lot of feelings about this term of paradisism. I want to go back to the original definition of paradisism.
A parasite is relating to or having the habit of a parasite, living on another organism, or caused by the resulting effects of parasites.
I still don't like that word. All right, let's move over to our socials.
So first of all, I want to give a huge shout out to all of our patrons, to Keaton Schultz, Lord Justice, Chris Singer, Nicola Point, Stephen Conifal, Preston, and Samuel McKenna. Thank you so much to all of you guys for the ongoing support. It really means a lot to the channel. I think we're getting close to a new mic stand, and, you know, we'll just keep...
We are encroaching 100 episodes soon, too. We got to do something special, guys. Ooh. We got to talk about this.
Well, I also want to say that maybe... This could potentially get edited out. We may have the opportunities to do some YouTube content pretty soon. Maybe some drafting online. We'll see how that goes.
We've been talking.
Something that we'd like to look out for with...
logistical nightmare, would you say?
Logistical nightmare, but you never know. We'll try and make it work. All right. First of all, I want to give a huge shout out to our MTG drafting page on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/MTGcube. Anthony Adams, right guy. Here. Is an admin and loves it and loves to be a part of that
making
community.
It safe for the Magic community. That's
absolutely
what I do.
Banning all the spammers and the scammers.
Oh, I got them all banned. I got so many rules on there now. Oh my gosh,
you're doing God's work. As always, if you love the show, we would truly appreciate it. Give us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Really helps get us out there to the community. And if you also want to support the show, you can use our Alter Sleeves affiliate link at altersleeves.com/ubercube. Go get 5% off your purchase. Or you can also use our Inked Gaming affiliate link. Go check them out. Playmats, dice bags, mouse pads, all kinds of custom and large volume products available for your cube experience. You can find us at Twitter. We are at ubercubemtgpod. You can also email us. As Anthony mentioned earlier, if you've got a longer question about your cube or about cube in general, or really anything.
TLDRs. TLDR car code. Any markdowns. Yes.
Exactly. You can reach us at ubercubemtgpodcast@gmail.com.
May, tell us about the Patreon.
Tell us about the Patreon.
You can find us at patreon.com/ubercube. And it's really great. Thanks. It goes a long way to supporting the show. And we truly appreciate our Patreons.
We do.
Other than that, we're going to see you all at the Ubercube Cubeathon. Still getting used to that?
Happy tapeworms.
Tapeworm.
Goblin King.